Inside Crime is brought to you by DoTerra. The DoTerra drug deactivation system helps stop opioid misuse before it starts. With DoTerra, unused prescription opioids and other drugs are gone for good. I'm Angeline Hartman. As a journalist, I've worked with cops and victims of crime all over the country. My craft is storytelling. My passion is crime fighting. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Inside Crime. I just want to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for all of your great support and your feedback about this podcast. It really was just a few weeks ago that we launched Inside Crime, and I appreciate all of you who have spread the word and have helped kick off season one. One of our most popular episodes of Inside Crime has been my conversation with Steve Murphy, who retired from the Drug Enforcement Administration, the DEA. I tell people I spoke with the real-life Steve Murphy, who's portrayed in the Netflix TV series Narcos. If you're a fan of that show, you know that last month, the producers of that hit series released a new season. It's called Narcos Mexico. The show was based in the 1980s, and it follows the true story of DEA Special Agent Enrique Camarena. They called him Kiki for short. Agent Camarena was kidnapped, tortured, and murdered in Mexico. Now, some of you may be familiar with that story, but you may not realize a little bit more about the history. After Agent Camarena's death, a high school friend and congressman in California created what were called Camarena Clubs. Hundreds of kids and adults in his hometown of Calexico wore red ribbons to honor him, and they pledged to lead drug-free lives. That was the start of what grew into a national campaign called Red Ribbon Week. Now, every year, during the month of October, more than 80 million people wear a red ribbon or display one to show their commitment to a drug-free lifestyle. So, if you didn't know before, that's the history of Red Ribbon Week. It's a great anti-drug campaign and a lovely tribute to DEA agent Kiki Camarena. After the murder of Agent Camarena, a special task force was established to bring those responsible to justice. It was called Operation Leyenda and was based in Los Angeles. It became the largest DEA homicide investigation ever. My guest today is Abel Reynoso. Abel was one of the original DEA agents assigned to Operation Leyenda. He's retired now, and I'm going to talk to him a little bit about Agent Camarena, but we're also going to get the inside story about a case many people never even heard about before. Abel will tell us about two Americans who were kidnapped in Mexico, what happened to them, led up to what happened to Agent Camarena just 2 weeks later.
It was in 1985. Enrique Salazar, or Kiki, was undercover investigating the Guadalajara cartel. Blamed for a massive raid and ordered to die, Kiki was kidnapped as he left the U.S. consulate in Guadalajara.
The murder of DEA agent Kiki Camarena made worldwide headlines back in 1985 after he was kidnapped by a Mexican drug cartel. The details of the torture he faced, unimaginable.
Tonight, the feds are putting the pressure on to find the cartel leader who tortured and murdered a local DEA agent.
Welcome to Inside Crime, Mr. Abel Reynoso.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
How's retirement going?
Outstanding. But don't tell anybody because they're going to recall me back. People get jealous.
You've had quite a career, but you started at Los Angeles Police Department.
Very proud of it. I loved L.A. I mean, I learned so much from the police department. You know, so when I worked in L.A., I had a chance to not only work patrol, but I also worked vice and narcotics. So I had experience working a lot undercover. I had experience working the streets.
And what made you leave LAPD to go to DEA? Oh, wow.
It was quite a challenge, believe it or not. I mean, I'm working narcotics in the street, and I think I could be better doing this at the federal level because of my experience. So after a lot of, you know, soul searching, I decided to join in the federal government.
And that was 1985.
In fact, like I say, one of the reasons too that I considered was, you know, the fact that I have work in the streets. I knew narcotics. Of course, I'm a bilingual, so I spoke Spanish real well. I knew the narcotics culture, street culture real well. And then when I saw the events that happened in Mexico with Kiki, that kind of pushed me over the edge, if there was any doubt.
Let's talk about what you think about Narcos, because that's the hot topic these days since the season premiere of season 4.
I like it. I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, obviously, it's a little bit more embellished than what the real life happens, having work overseas. I can tell you, I wish it was that easy. I wish it worked that way for us in our show, the way it happens on TV. But it is a fascinating show. It's a very interesting topic. Interesting enough that it started with Kiki Camarena's story versus, you know, all the other stories they could have picked out of, you know, out of the Narcos. I mean, repertoire. There's so much information about narcotics and trafficking in Latin America that you can pick any country and do a show on it for the whole season.
I'm very familiar with Kiki Camarena's story, but I think a lot of people don't know it. So it is important to start with that so that people know the history.
That is correct. You know, it happened 33 years ago. So a lot of people have forgotten. I mean, every once in a while you see people with a red ribbon month in October, but they don't know why. So it is true. People forgotten about, you know, Kiki's story, and it's important that we remember it.
Can you tell me a little bit about the history?
The Kiki story starts, I mean, other than his wonderful career, he was also a cop, and he was born in Mexico, in Mexicali. He grew up in Calexico, which is the other side of Mexicali, the border town in the USI Calexico. He became a fireman and a police officer there, and later on he joined DEA, worked undercover, did a lot of cases, very similar careers as to what I've done. You know, that's one thing about DEA. We have a lot of ex-law enforcement, ex-police officers that join DEA. He joins the DEA, becomes a really good agent, and eventually he wants to change his life. So he decides to take a tour of overseas. And of course, being a Spanish speaker, where's the action? And this is, late 70s, early 80s. So he decides to do a tour of Mexico. So he starts really navigating based on the experience that he previously had, navigating the waters of narcotic trafficking in Mexico, which is, you know, it's sort of the beginning of the cartels. They weren't cartels just yet, like they call them today. So he got involved and started doing some real interesting cases. I mean, he worked a lot. He had a lot of good informants. I say he used the same concepts and the same ethical work that he used up here. Unfortunately, when you work overseas, it's not quite the same. He encountered a lot of dangers down there. And then in 85, somebody made the decision to kidnap him. And they do pick him up February 7, 1985. They picked him up right in front of his office in Guadalajara, Mexico. There were quite a few witnesses, actually. They actually saw that because it happened in broad daylight. It happened like at 2:15 in the afternoon. And he was taken out.
They just picked him up and shoved him in the car?
Shoved him in the car. They grabbed him. They grabbed him right next to his vehicle. He was going to go to lunch with his wife, Mika. And they picked him up. They say, according to informants, this is all what I'm going to tell you now is all the information that we develop later. According to informants, somebody approached him and told him, hey, listen, the comandante, one of the bosses, wanted to talk to you. He kind of hesitated. He didn't have a chance, so they immediately grabbed him, and he kind of resisted a little bit, and they put him in a car and drove him away. What we know after that is that he was taken for a ride around town for a while, and then eventually was taken to a place. We don't know whether it's just one or several, where we know for a fact that he was severely tortured for several days, not just one day, but we believe more than a day or two. He was revived several times by a medical doctor and then continued torture. And then eventually when he was totally devastated, they decided to kill him and then murder him. At the same time, they also picked up one of his informants, a gentleman that was a very close friend of his. And they did the same thing with him. They tortured him and killed him. He was a Mexican citizen.
Is that the guy, the pilot?
Yeah.
So they were abducted. They were kidnapped together.
At the same time, not necessarily together. The pilot was freelancing as a pilot working out of the Guadalajara airport. And he was, he would do flights. I mean, and we're looking at acres and acres of marijuana plants. So how would you find those? And they decided, hey, let's take some flights. And that's why Captain Zavala became such a good friend of Kiki. And they would do these flights over the certain fields based on informants, information. What happened to Kiki was kind of unusual in many ways, because usually the retribution and narcotics enforcement is they kill cops. They just kill you. That was it. In this case, they wanted to know. It wasn't about killing him. It was about finding out what he knew.
And there's no question that when he was picked up, that they knew they were kidnapping a DEA.
Well, they had
agent.
Pictures of him. I mean, one of the things that we did discover later on when we talk about it is they took a photo of actually Kiki in an office of in a law enforcement office of a local area, local police station. They actually took a picture. But also, everybody knew him. According to the informant, the person that approached him knew he knew him, and they knew who he was. So it wasn't, like I said, it was not just a random kidnapping.
Right.
Ironically, Kiki was, in the last 2 weeks of his deployment, he was ready to get transferred back to the United States. He had done a few years tour.
No kidding.
Yeah, he was like 2 weeks. Two more weeks, he would have been back in the States. But we do know that he was tortured. We do know that. We do know that he was questioned methodically. There are some tape. There were tapes, audio tapes, recordings of the actual. That's why we know there were actual recordings of the torture.
He was eventually killed.
Yes,
right?
He was murdered. Yes, he was picked up about 2:15 on Thursday, February 7. According to sources, he was tortured that afternoon, that evening, all that night, and then continue on the following day. And this is, again, we're going to, we're not witnesses, but some of the witnesses that were there told us that. The following day is when they procure a doctor, and he comes in and sees, you know, how bad he was, and he gives him some medicine to revive him, some B complex vitamin and lidocaine to kind of revive him and continue to torture him. So we believe he was probably tortured about a day and a half. And you can hear, by the way, when you hear the tapes of the torture, you can actually hear a methodical format. It's not just like beating him up out of the blue. They will hit him, and then they will make him rest. They would ask him a question, then they will hit him again. It's very monstrous, very painful thing. But also, because of the physical and mental and all that, that we don't believe that he was able to tell them a lot after a while. So, and I think that what, according to another source, that what enraged some of the individuals. And that's when they began to really brutally beat him up. Because it was, you know, eventually when the bodies were found, there were injuries on the body that were way beyond what a torture would it require.
Inside Crime is brought to you by DeTerra. The DeTerra drug deactivation system is an independently tested, safe, and environmentally sound solution that permanently deactivates, destroys, and disposes of unneeded pills, patches, liquids, creams, and films right at home. Be part of the solution to reduce drug abuse. Learn more at DeTerraSystem.com.
And that's when they began to really brutally beat him up, because it was, you know, eventually when the bodies were found, there were injuries on the body that were way beyond what a torture would it require.
So how was he found?
So there were thousands of calls, and it was almost impossible to follow all the leads. There was a shooting, and the reason of the shooting said that because they knew that the body was there, the agents were not allowed to be there when the raid took place. But when the raid happened and they killed, there was nobody. Nobody were found. And a few hours later, all of a sudden, near the road, near that particular ranch, there were two bundles, two plastic bags. And lo and behold, those two plastic bags contained the body of Kike and the pilot. That's how they found him. It was almost like literally a month to the day, 30 days later. And so now you have now you want to know what happened. There's three phases to the investigation. I work in probably the most fascinating part of it, which was the actual investigation of it. But when you hear and listen to these people that work with them, and they knew him, and then they actually find out all the facts, it was quite an outrage.
What happens in the end? Who is prosecuted for this crime?
Well, there were several people that were arrested. Like I say, some of them were arrested overseas, some of them arrested in Mexico. Again, don't get me wrong. There were some Mexican officials that really wanted to help. They did help. I mean, a lot of this was done with their help, despite some of the cover-ups. There were some good people in there. They really assisted. Now, the main players, and you see it in the show, is Caro Quintero, Fonseca, Don Neto, and then Felix Gallardo. And then there's a bunch of little players that come around and come and go there. And they were all responsible for it. I mean, that's the first phase of it. And they were arrested, and they were prosecuted in Mexico. Some of them are still in jail. One of them left recently, but everybody else is still in prison. They give them quite a few years in prison in Mexico. So there was that part. There were quite a few people that were murdered behind this case. They disappeared, literally. They will never be seen again. I mean, witnesses, players, other people that participated, and they were quiet. So there's that group. But it took us quite a few years to put the case together. And it's still, to this day, there are a lot of questions about, you know, what about this guy? What about that guy? Of course, you know, that's never going to be known.
In Narcos Mexico, there's a restaurant scene where two Americans are killed. And this is weeks before Kiki Camarena's death.
Right. They were friends. And Walker was a Vietnam vet living in Guadalajara.
So we have two friends. We have Albert Radulat and we have John Walker.
Yeah, John Walker, right? And Walker lives Albert with his wife
is the dentistry student, yeah. And John is the writer who lives in Guadalajara.
One of the things, unfortunately, one of the things that he wanted to write about, and this is kind of interesting, he wanted to write about drug trafficking issues. So, you know, it was a time where you kind of had to be careful with that. When you go down to Mexico and you start asking questions about that, you have to be careful who you're talking to. So what happens is they're spending a week together, and the day before Radula decides to come back to the U.S., they decided they wanted to get some seafood. They walk into this restaurant. You know, you're talking about being in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? So they walk in there, and lo and behold, there is the cream of the crop of all the drug traffickers known in the area having lunch at this particular, or having dinner at this particular location. That's what happens. And of course, they're blonde, blue eye, both of them. So one of them kind of looks at it and goes, I think these guys are gringos. And they start asking them questions. And of course, they were, like I say, they were Americans. So they decided, you know what, I bet you they're DEA guys. So let's find out. So they take him to the kitchen, to the back, and they're tortured, basically what happens, for several hours. Brutally tortured. And then eventually get wrapped in some tablecloth and carpets, and they're taken to they're still alive. They take into to the outside of the city, and they get executed, and they get buried.
The bad guys thought that Albert and John were DEA agents.
Right. Yeah, they had been another issue with another individual a few months earlier in another part of Mexico, where a Mexican-American was also killed and tortured and disappeared, and nobody said anything. And I think that they thought, if we did this before and nothing happened, What are they going to do with this guy? They're probably going to do the same thing. Nobody's going to say anything. Of course, it was different.
In other words, the bad guys thought that since there was really no reaction from the United States or the federal government, from DEA, regarding what happened with Albert and John when they were killed.
Right, right.
That the bad guys thought, well, there's no reaction, so we'll just keep on doing what we can.
Yeah, and again, remember, they pretty much controlled the city then. I mean, they were pretty powerful. Nobody complained. Nobody said anything. There was no police investigation for a while. And again, this happened like a week or two before. Nobody kind of put two and two together, okay? I mean, it's easier to see it now that we have the information. But back then, you know, these two guys, maybe they went somewhere else.
Were they found? Did you say they were found?
What happened is when they started looking for the bodies, for Kiki's bodies, there was a location where the cartel used to a normal thing to be to drop bodies into. In other words, anytime they kill somebody, they used to bury him. It's like a park outside Guadalajara. It's a secluded area, and that used to be a regular holdup for taking the bodies and executing people. And so they went over there, and of course, lo and behold, in a shallow grave, they found the two bodies of these two Americans. Nobody put two and two together. Okay, this is not these two Americans were civilians. They had nothing to do with DEA, were not involved with the embassy, were not involved in law enforcement. The drug dealers saw that they were, but nobody else knew.
Right. The drug dealers thought that they had killed two DEA agents.
Right. When you're a criminal, every time you see somebody, it's typical. Every criminal, every time you see somebody that looks like a cop, you think they're following you, right? Well, for them, they thought these two Americans, we are having a meeting, a high-end meeting with all the drug traffic, and all of a sudden these two Americans show up. How coincidental could that be? What happened is they tortured. They said, if you tell us who you are, we're going to let you go, let you leave. So, of course, these people are, they're nobody. They're kids. They get tortured under pain, and they're being tortured with ice picks. They were stabbed. They were being tortured with ice picks. They were beating up. So they confess, and they did say that they were DEA agents.
They would say anything
Exactly. I mean, okay. I'm talking some pretty vicious torture methods. We're not talking about just, somebody telling you that's going to do. I mean, the plastic bag, the waterboarding, the ice picking. I mean, this is pretty brutal. I mean, those bodies were pretty mangled when we found them. But anyway, so after that, they admitted. And once they did that, it was like, oh, see, there you go. So we were right. And of course they weren't. Of course they weren't. But
so let me ask you to clarify. So were the bodies found before Kiki was kidnapped?
No. And nobody knew that this guy had disappeared. I mean, there was a timeline.
And also, you pointed out in the Narcos episode, when these two gentlemen were in the restaurant, the way it's depicted, in the show is that, it all happens pretty quickly.
Yeah, no, they didn't. I mean, I tell you, I
in real life,
I actually talked to an eyewitness that was there, and it said it was a long time. They had him for several hours. I mean, there was, in fact, even when they interview one of the waiters, they had to clean the blood from the floor. It was pretty gory. There was a lot of blood in the floor of the kitchen because they had him for a few hours in there. The people that were involved, that were witnesses to the murder of these guys, of the two guys in the restaurant, were also the same group that moved the bodies of Kiki. And they were living in California, by the way, so they were hiding here in L.A.
It's so what you're telling me is it's the exact same people who
participated.
Killed.
Yeah, they were actually at the restaurant. Remember, at the restaurant, you had a group of drug traffickers, right, meeting, and there was a lot of henchmen. Well, part of that group was the one they had moved up. They later on when they end up killing Kiki, because Kiki gets killed at the house, supposedly, right? So where there is an issue. Where was the body of Kiki held for a while? Because I don't know if you know this. Kiki's body was mummified.
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
know
I mean,
that.
Like I said, there's so many stuff here. Kiki's body was mummified, and we couldn't figure out how he got mummified. So what happened is when they found the body was found in a totally different place. I told you, the bodies of Ryland Walker were found in a park outside of Guadalajara. The bodies of Kiki and the captain were found in another state, which was Michoacán, which is you know, a few hundred miles from Jalisco, Estado Jalisco. So what happened is when the forensic, FBI forensic team came down and they actually took their samples of Kiki and the captain, they found traces of the dirt that is also found in the park where the Rala Walker bodies were found. They put the bodies in the park, right? Supposedly after they killed Kiki and the captain, they throw them in the park, according to some sources. Well, when the pressure begins to show up, where's the body? And now they realize that DEA is pressuring everybody in Guadalajara and in Jalisco. They have the bodies moved from Guadalajara, from Jalisco, to the state of Michoacán, like a few hundred miles away, right? Well, this group, the same group that was at the restaurant La Langosta, was the same group that moved the bodies. There was a family of 7 or 8 brothers. They were all gunmen for the cartel. And what they did is they load the bodies, and one of the guys told me. I mean, the guy that told me the story of the restaurant murder is the one that told me how they moved the bodies. What they did is they put their bodies in a pickup truck and they drove through dirt roads through the back. Because what happened was the main roads were a lot of checkpoints for the cops and the military. So they rode. They knew how to get to the other state through dirt roads. So they move around. And what happened is the reason the bodies are found in plastic bags is because what happened is when they were downloading the bodies, Kike and Captain Zavala's body into the ranch, what they were going to do is they were going to dig a hole and bury them in the hole. Well, what happened is as they were doing that, they pulled inside the road and they were next to the ranch, a military helicopter flew by. So what happened is they just threw the plastic bags over the fence and took off. That's why the bodies were found on the side of the road.
In the open that.
Yeah. Well, what happened is one little guy is walking down. He's riding this burro down the hall, down the road, and it smells a really strong smell. So he walks. He looks at this. He sees these two big, they were white plastic bags. And he looks at him and he smells. So he goes and calls the local cops at the town, small town cops. And they come out and they open the bag. And guess what? They were the bodies. So anyway, it's a fascinating story that never ends.
What happened to Kiki? How did that change the course of DEA?
We wanted justice. We wanted to find out, you know, hey, you know, it's one of our guys. This was the first DEA agent that actually was tortured like this, actually, and because of doing what we're supposed to do. So we took it very seriously. And that particular investigation, it put DEA in a totally different aspect to how the drug traffickers around the world see us. They are terrified of DEA because they know that once you make the DEA list, we're going to go get you. We're going to find you, and we're going to bring you. And if it's going to take 10 years, it's going to take 10 years. A lot of them would end up going to jail. A lot of them die. And a lot of the people they were executed by their own cartels. So the payoff at the end was not worth the risk. Which, I mean, this is what they tell you. This is not what I'm saying, but what the drug traffickers said. It was the biggest mistake that they ever made, and that kind of shows in the series if you see it. In fact, one of the sources told us that when they picked up Kiki and they bring him to the house, there is an argument that Don Neto kind of slapped Caro Quintero and he said, "You idiot, you don't have no idea what you've done. You have just ruined everything. Now, you touch one of us, we're all coming. We're all coming to you. The world is coming. Something bad this way comes." I mean, and they never expected that. And I think that was part of one of the reasons why they decided to take him. They didn't expect the reaction from the U.S. government and from DEA particularly. And that message is still alive today.
I just want to say thank you so much for filling us in on some of the details that people probably don't know.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to clarify some of the issues. And like I said, there's a lot of more information. The main thing is that we did the right thing, I think. And I still believe in that. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate your invitation.
As Abel said, there's so much more to the story of Agent Camarena's murder. One of the many people convicted in the case was cartel leader Rafael Cotto Quintero. He was sentenced to 40 years in prison. But after spending 28 years in prison, in 2013, he was released. He was set free because of what's described as a bureaucratic technicality.
Just recently, an appeals court in Mexico released a drug cartel leader by the name of Rafael Caro Quintero. And this is an affront to justice because this man, drug dealer, was responsible for the murder of numerous people, including a former DEA agent by the name of Enrique Camarena.
We are angry. We are mad. This is personal. Never did we think that this was going to happen. He has no right to be walking free anywhere, not in Mexico, not in any place in the United States.
Brian, this is the largest reward ever offered for a fugitive.
That it is, Kimberly and Steve. The FBI looking for Rafael Caro Quintero. He's now the 518th person added to the FBI's most wanted list, but the reward for catching him sits alone at the largest ever.
That largest reward ever is $20 million. It's being offered after a new indictment against Quintero on charges of smuggling heroin, cocaine, marijuana, and methamphetamines into the United States between 1980 and 2017. So, this case that began more than 30 years ago is very much alive today. And that's it for this episode of Inside Crime. For more information about our show, go to our website, insidecrime.com. Again, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Angeline Hartman. Please be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Inside Crime.